Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Into 81 sessions of the United States Congress, which provide the legislative direction for the land we live in, there have come some of America's outstanding followers of our democratic heritage. They've come from every state in the Union and from many different circumstances, some by routes that were direct and unopposed, others by routes that were closed and took pioneering struggle to negotiate. The story of one congressman who came by the latter route, Destination Freedom tells today in a chapter entitled Father to Son.
My name, Powell, A. Clayton. Ordinarily, you'd call me Reverend Powell because until a few years ago, I was skipper of one of the largest Protestant churches in the country. I'm here to tell you about the man who they call Reverend Powell now, and who calls me Dad.
Hello, Dad. Sorry I haven't got time to talk about the church now, but I got to pack.
And who came home one cold afternoon in February of 1940 and went about packing his bags, getting ready to travel down a route I'd once started on. But I was never to get as far as the young man who called me...
Dad.
Yes, Adam?
About this idea of running for Congress.
Well?
The committee down at the church hinted that my father was one of those behind it. How about that?
I won't deny it.
Why?
You've wanted it for a long time, Adam.
How did you know? I never said
it. You never said anything about it. But you haven't been A. Clayton Powell's son for 30 years without letting me know something about the way you think. You're worried about it?
Very much. I'm not sure, Dad. I'm not sure why I've got the urge to get into Congress. I'm not sure it's in keeping
with the church principles.
It's been on my mind that way.
I know it has.
Is that all you can say?
No. No, I'll say more when the time comes. You're going to visit the Senate now, I understand.
Well, a committee from the church wants me to go down to the Senate to testify for the anti-poll tax bill.
I see.
They've been trying to pass that bill against collecting poll tax, well, ever since...
Ever since I left the South.
Yeah. The committee found a lot of facts about poll tax. This notebook full.
Well,
shows how few people vote and how much it costs and how easy it is to stay in office when you...
I've seen them, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd know all about it. It's these senators down in Washington who don't know. Well, they're going to get the surprise of their lives this session.
You think so?
All they need, Dad, is for someone to show them the facts. We've got the facts here. They don't need a minister in Congress as long as they let us in and listen to our testimony.
No.
That's why I wonder if this idea of me getting out and running for Congress is necessary. A minister's place is in the pulpit. Well, if I'm going to catch that 440 train, I'd better be going.
Yeah, I guess you'd better.
Well, what's the matter? You don't like the idea of my going?
It's a good idea.
You look disappointed in it.
Go and catch a train and explain to the Senate committee why the poll tax has to go.
Sure, Dad. I'll be back in a week.
And, Adam.
Huh?
Don't be too disappointed, son, if they find a young Negro minister too troublesome to listen to.
I'll tell you all about it when I get back.
I heard about it before he got back. He walked out with his facts and his figures, his data and his charts that told the story about poll taxes and the disenfranchisement of 5 million voters. He, a New York-bred minister, who had only the stories and cold figures to guide him. I had the living memories. That day, he was just another minister's son among many sons who came to testify before a Senate committee. But what happened to him could have only happened to one minister's son, my son. It happened when he went to the committee hearing. He was walking towards the chambers when a guard stopped.
Say... Where do you think you're going?
I'm supposed to testify on the anti-poll tax bill.
Got it passed?
Oh, here. Here, will this do?
Well, I suppose so. Right through that door there.
Thank you.
And I tell you, good people, If this subversive bill to eliminate the payment of poll taxes...
He went inside the crowded committee rooms and took a seat in the back and looked around in the glaring light of the bored faces. He brought out the papers from his briefcase and noticed how they contradicted the words of the speakers who held the floor from the beginning of the meeting until very late in the afternoon. When he rose from his seat and raised his hand, and when no one noticed, he spoke.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, may I have the floor for a minute? Mr. Speaker! I don't know the rules of this committee, but I'd like to break in if I may.
State your name and business.
A. Clayton Powell, Jr. I'm a Baptist minister. I'd like to speak on the poll tax question.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't finished.
Will you yield a minute to this gentleman from New York?
What has he got to say that I haven't already covered?
You haven't covered the fact that poll taxes, according to every authority that has investigated them, take the vote away from more white citizens in your state than Negro citizens.
I know my own state.
I know my figures. You haven't covered the fact that in your poll tax state, 2% of the electorate can send a man to Congress. In most states, it takes at least 60% of the voters.
Mr. Chairman, this Negro's out of order. I've got the floor.
That's the trouble. It's time someone took the floor who can refute the lies you're telling about the poll tax.
Order, please.
Mr. Chairman, this boy's out of order, and I demand he be expelled from the room.
Well, Senator, if you say so...
I do say so. Guard!
Wait! Listen to me. My church sent me here to present some facts. Let me read them to you.
We're not interested in your facts when you refuse to observe the rules of this committee.
But you're using the rules deliberately to keep me from being heard. I demand...
You demand nothing in this committee. Guard!
No, wait.
Yes, sir.
Get this scallywag out and escort him to the street.
All right, come on, you. Come on.
Wait a minute. You haven't heard me. Mr. Chairman.
Come on, guard. Take him out.
No, wait. I've got a right to be heard.
Now, come on. Don't make trouble. Come on. Now, beat it.
Please, don't push me. Let me back in.
Oh, no, you don't. Now, get up and get out of here. The idea of coming here disturbing the committee. Get up. Get going.
He got up. He gathered together his facts and his figures scattered over the whole floor. Data no one had asked for, no one cared to listen to. And he came home again, and I heard him very quietly open the door. Very quietly walk past my study. Son?
Yes, Dad?
I read about what happened.
Where?
It was in the papers.
Dad...
You didn't get very far, did you? You know this idea of mine about you running for Congress? What do you think of it now?
It's nonsense. They don't need a minister in Congress.
They need anyone who will stand by the truth.
I know. You once wanted to be a congressman. That was good. I'm not made for it. I could tell by what happened in the committee.
Was that a test?
For me, it was. I fought with all I had. It wasn't enough.
You had more than enough, son. You didn't draw up on it.
What are you talking about, Dad?
You took up the ministry because you believed you could do the most good that way, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And I'm afraid that in the years you've taken my place in the pulpit, you've forgotten how long it took to build our church. You remember your grandfather, son?
Yes, from a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. A good while before we ever heard of New York or ever dreamed that my son and I would live to be wealthy and respected. Going out to help other people instead of looking for help.
What about grandfather?
Do you remember how you used to run your hands along his back and feel the scars, and he'd say,
"It's the initial P on my back, Adam. That's it. One straight line and a loop. I reckon P is going to be the first letter in the alphabet you learn. Stands for Powell. Huh? How'd I get it?" "It was burned there, son, by an overseer to remind me that I was born a slave."
You remember grandfather, son?
I remember now.
You never knew what it meant to have been born in those early days after the Civil War. It meant being born with the past of slavery still hanging vivid in the minds of everyone around us. It was then the initial P in my father's back burned him more than ever, and he decided to wipe the memory of it from his mind and from his children's mind. One day, 10 years after the war had been won.
Come on around here, you kids. Gather around me.
Yes,
Dad. And now, some of you are too young to understand what I'm going to say, but never mind, you'll understand it later. The old master's come here to make us a proposition. He proposes that we stay on the land where I was once a slave. Now, wait a minute. not going to be like it was the days after the war. He proposed that we stay on the land and plow it and raise crops. 1/3 of the harvest will go to him for rent. The rest, I keeps. The only proposition we got to go on. If you think you can get enough out of the land, we'll try it.
We tried it. We Powells became the first of 100,000 sharecroppers in the South. We initiated the system. We were the first to try it and the first to discover...
No matter how many of the kids I keeps in the field, no matter how many acres I plows up, when it's dividing time, we're still behind. Adam, come here. You're young, but you're strong, and you seem to have a bright head on you. Now, some Yankees opening up a school for farm boys when you finish your part of the plowing. Run up the hill to that school, get as much as you can in an hour, and then run back down before nightfall.
I ran up the hill and met the strange Yankee that had come to teach sharecroppers the ABCs. He had an old Webster's blueback spelling book. And when I had learned this, he brought me my first real book.
Here. Now, I don't have any geography or fancy English books for you to be reading out of. Just as well. Only thing you can practice on is the Almighty's book. Take it. Start from Genesis, go through to Revelations. If you can learn to read the Almighty's book, you can learn to read anything.
I learned to read the Almighty's book. I read it to the sharecroppers in the evening when we gathered around the one-room house that was the home of the Powells. I read it until I knew the verses by heart, and families for miles around would come by the Powell farm and call Father.
Whoa! Whoa, 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 whoa.
Say, Clayton! Oh, Clayton Powell!
Yeah? Mr. Jibber. What is it now, Jenner?
The same thing I asked about last Sunday. How about sending that Bible-reading youngster over to the house?
Adam's the Bible-reading one of the family, but he's also the workingest one. I can't keep loaning him out like this.
Not even if it spreads the word of the Almighty?
It's all right to spread the Almighty's words, but how'll I get my cotton spread is the question. I need him.
The Lord needs him.
I ain't aiming to deny the Lord, Mr. Jenner, but... Unless we get the crops.
I know. Every farmer in Franklin County's been borrowing the Bible reading ability of your son Adam.
Yeah?
Taking him away from his family duties. It's worth something to you. I'll pay you for it.
Well, Mr. Jenner, I didn't mean
How
it.
Much is a sermon from him worth?
Well, now, I wouldn't think of charging for something like a little reading of the Bible. I wouldn't think
Would
of
a quarter for the day do?
Well.
30 cents?
Now...
30 cents and not a penny more.
Only for you, Mr. Jeter. Now, Adam, put down the hoe and pick up the book.
And whenever he'd call, I'd put down the hoe and go with the farmers and read the great words to them. And as I grew older, the more their inner meaning revealed themselves to me, and the more the poverty around me seemed unnecessary... The more racial segregation seemed intolerable. And secretly, I groped for a way to become one of the lawmakers of the county and to put the meaning of the gospel into the government. I read every scrap of paper that came to the farm that told of a different life outside the county, that told of the new reorganization of the state and of the new men in office who, though unseen, were directing the fate of farmers and tenants around Virginia. And I longed to take my gospel among them. But one day my father said...
Adam, come here, boy. Adam, we got an offer that allow us to live easier. One of the old masters is now beginning to pay better wages, John Tompkins. I'm to take charge of the stable, mother's to take charge of the kitchen, and you, Adam... You'll handle the Tompkins cows. All told, we should bring in $100 a year. That way... Maybe we'll be able to escape sharecropping. Now, you do the best you can with your education, Adam. I don't want you to give up the book. I want you to keep on with the book.
He wanted me to keep on and become a minister. and I wanted to go in the direction of the state legislature and see if I could find another way out of the poverty around us. Then, one year, when the farmers of the county gathered to send a representative to the legislature, Jinter stopped by our fields and called to the old man.
Oh, Clayton!
What is this time, Jinter? If you want the boy to preach again, he's already been asked for.
The kind of preaching I got in mind, nobody's asked him.
Speak plain.
There's voting going on for new state representatives. We hear every county's picking its men.
You come to bother me about that.
Now, wait now, Clayton. There's something in this voting, even though it has passed folks by in this county for 20 years. Some of the boys been thinking that the way to get relief from the condition around here is to send an honest man upstate to talk to the governor.
Yeah?
Shucks, they've already passed too many laws we don't get to hear about in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, I know.
Well, if we had a man up there...
Yeah, that's right. I'll get together with you.
We're ahead of you, Clayton. We've gotten together.
You could have called a neighbor here.
We're going to call your boy, young Adam.
For what?
Well, he's old enough to run for the state senate, and besides...
He don't know a thing about law.
He knows about the higher law. People around here trust him.
Yeah.
He reads the words though they're branded on his soul, the way the slave brand's on your back.
Yeah, he does that.
He'd make a right good representative for the sharecroppers in this state. If he's willing to run, we'll elect him sure as you're born. If he'll run.
I did run. I ran not knowing that the sturdy laws of the Reconstruction era had been uprooted in the rush of the planters for a return to their old power. I ran not knowing that new changes had taken place. Changes that a student of the Golden Rule had no way of knowing.
Hey, look at this! Young Charles won! Hey, men, come here! Our candidate's in! We got him in!
They had gotten me in. I had polled more votes than the other candidates together. I was going to the state legislature.
You're young, but you've been brought up to respect his law. Armed with his law, you can't fail. Get relief for the sharecroppers. Get some loans for us to buy land the way it was promised after the war.
Now you're overloading the boy, Jinter. Let him just get inside the legislature. I think he'd be doing all right if he could just make that step first.
I went out to make that step first. I went with my gospel and my homespun pants and shoes made from the hide of an old ox that had died the week before. And I made my way to the state capitol and into the room set aside for the new legislature.
All right, gentlemen, step up and get your credentials. Step up when your name's called. Frazier, Okaloosa County. Show your identification, take these credentials, go to the next room and register with the clerk. Hamlet?
Yes, sir.
Hamlet of Center County?
Yes, sir.
Follow Mr. Frazier right through that door. Well, now, boys, I guess that's all the new legislators we got for this session. All recorded?
All except me, sir.
You? Who in the devil are you?
I'm Adam Powell, sir, from Franklin County.
Oh, you're that Negro that expected to slip through the vote laws.
What are you talking about?
The poll tax, that's what.
I don't know about that, but I know I'm the representative of...
Our sharecroppers who didn't pay a penny of tax. Tax law went into effect 4 months before the voting began. You backwoods boys ought to know that. The only decent way of screening the trash from the citizens.
Oh, citizens, send me here.
We're sending you back. Your vote's been disqualified. Pete... See into the door.
But listen, you can't do that. They spent everything they had in the campaign to send me here. Nobody tried to collect any poll tax.
New better to try to squeeze water out of stone-broke sharecroppers. Now, Pete.
Come on, you.
No,
hey,
no.
Rocky, help me. This guy's giving me trouble.
Okay.
Let's go.
Hold his legs, Rocky.
Okay.
All right, now I've got his hands. Open the door. A one, a two, a four.
That's nice. Flat on his back.
Here, you forgot something. Your book. Here, now take it back where it belongs.
I picked myself up. I looked bewildered at the faces around me jeering, leering, and the pistols drawn. And I realized that before I could reach these keepers of the keys of the state with my Bible, I would have to reach them in a way that would force them to listen to me and those I represented. I didn't know how. I picked up my Bible and went home.
What happened, young'un? Come on, tell us what happened. Why doesn't he answer, Clayton? Make your boy talk.
I done what I could. He come home and said he wouldn't take him, that's all.
It's those taxes they told him about. Is that it, young'un?
Part of it.
The other part?
He stops there. Now, you men may as well go home. The boy's not well. I told you I thought we'd send him to the legislature too early. Go on home, leave him to me. In the morning, he'll feel better. He'll have a lot to talk about.
But in the morning, I had nothing I could talk about with the men I'd grown up with. How could I tell them that I had not come to believe they needed another power, not in the book, but to bring about the freedom they needed? I had put down the book. I turned from it and towards a world I'd never known, son. I became a vagrant, and I drifted to the state always looking, searching for a strong wind to blow me into port. I became a gambler and lawbreaker, and I lived in order to forget the feeling of impotence and hopelessness I'd felt the day I lay on my back in front of the state legislature without the power to make men feel or understand. I was that way when I worked in an Ohio coal mine and dug coal beside a wandering minister whom the men called Moses and whom I chided as we worked side by side.
Preacher, what you got on your agenda for tonight when you get out of this here coal patch?
There's work of a different sort to handle, son.
Don't you ever get tired of throwing that stuff around? You know, when I was a kid...
You still are.
I mean, when I was green and gullible. I used to know the book better than anyone in my county.
I've heard. I want you to come out to my place tonight. I'd like to talk with you.
With me?
Yes.
Hey, you hear that, Steve?
Yeah.
Look, Moses, I've converted more sinners in an hour than you can in a year. Especially if you work on guys like me.
Hey, what was that?
It came from the forward tunnel. Sounds like maybe...
Coal gas exploded! Coal gas! All right, now, men, now we've got to get out of this tunnel, or we'll crush each other if we don't do it orderly. Now, men...
No, nothing. Get out of my way. Get out of my way. Come on, you guys. Come on.
Some men went wild and panic, pushed them over each other and allowed some to follow off down the tunnel and get caught in a cross explosion from the forward shaft. And we pushed the barricades to keep the gas from seeping through, and the minister spoke up.
The gas will cut through this barrier in 10 minutes. Men, the only way out of here is through this wall about here. Here's where the escape line comes down. I've studied the mine. I've studied every passageway in it. Now, who'll help me cut through?
I'll help you.
All right. How about you, Steve? Come on.
Somehow they believed him. Somehow we raised our picks and struck through the wall while the minister worked and sang under his breath. And it was that way we came out of the mine, through the right shaft and up again into the clear evening air. It was then that I took a path I've never moved from since.
This way, Paul.
I was walking the minister's way home in the rain. I said,
I'm sorry for riding you, brother.
I understand.
I don't understand why I kept hounding you, or why the men kept behind you and gambled on you.
I suppose it's because they believe in me.
They don't go for that religious talk.
They go for any talk that'll spare their lives and give them something to live for. They know I want to live myself. They know I wouldn't gamble my own life off. It's why I'm a minister. And you could be, too.
I've tried.
You could try it again. You still have time.
What?
To give some leadership to those who follow you. Ah, I've watched you, Powell.
Yeah.
You want to show people how to live on Earth, not in the hereafter. Well,
yeah.
That's good. If you can make your life an example, others will follow. I can prove that.
You've already proved it.
Then come inside my church. Come in out of the rain.
And I went inside and out of the rain, son. I went ahead and helped build a church I left for you to lead. This Abyssinian Baptist Church. One of the largest Protestant churches in America. I wanted you to interpret it. And if I have made my life an example to follow, do so.
Is that all, Dad?
For tonight. Will you think about it?
I will.
And this boy for whom I had built the church, looked back into the corners of my life and found that he had more steps to climb, and that these steps were not all in the pulpit, but towards Congress. He looked over the nation and saw that same poll tax which had disenfranchised his father and the fathers and mothers of millions was still imposed. He looked inside Congress for representation of the 15 million Negro Americans, and he found but one Negro congressman in its halls. And he took up where I had left off and went on to keep his appointment with Congress. And when he had been elected and was called to make his maiden speech, he remembered his example.
Chair recognizes the congressman from New York, Adam Clayton Powell, Jr.
Mr. Speaker, the representative who spoke before me asked why all the fuss about a minister coming from the pulpit into the halls of Congress. I came here because I remembered as a child seeing burned on the brown back of my grandfather the letter P. It stood for slavery. That seared my memory, and I have resolved never to rest until I wipe the meaning of it from my mind and the traces of it from this land we live in. Those traces still live in the form of poll taxes, lynching, unfair employment practices. Today, here in Congress, my first day, I rededicate myself to erasing those traces, to putting the principles of democracy into practice, and bringing about full citizenship rights for the Negro people and all other Americans, not at some vaguely promised date in the future, but now, right now, in this immediate future. On this we will not compromise. On this we will not be neutral, and we will not mark time. This, I answer the representative, is why another minister has entered the halls of Congress.
Yes, that was his first speech. It was not his last. He went in to set an example. He's waiting for others to follow.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of the A. Clayton Powells, father and son, prominent ministers and political leaders of New York. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of A. Clayton Powell, Sr. was played by Dean Almquist, and that of his son by Oscar Brown, Jr. Others were Stan Gordon, Ted Bliss, Sid McCoy, Fred Pinkard, and Jess Pugh. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Sound effects were by Cliff Mueller and Dave Squires, and the control operator was Gary DeVleek. This is Hugh Downs inviting you to be with us again next week when we will tell the story of folk artist Albert Ammon. You're tuned for The Stars on NBC.